Hey there, you're listening to What the Riff? Join us as we remember the great rock and roll hits from a month between 1965 and 1995. We're going to riff on all things about the bands, the members, and the goings-on during that time. We hope to inspire you to find and download the songs you hear today, whether you're fans who forgot about some of these tracks or maybe never even heard them before. Check out our blog at whattheriff.com or follow us on Facebook at What the Riff. Here's a shout out to our sponsors, Right Column Financial, offering CFO and bookkeeping services for small business, Stanton Electric, a commercial electrical specialist, and Marbury Creative Group, a brand development agency that helps companies tell it better. So let's turn up the volume and enjoy this episode of What the Riff?
Homemade buses collide on a mountain road in the Philippines, plunging both off a cliff, killing 84. A fire on the Apollo 1 command module kills 3 astronauts during a launch rehearsal. And a treaty signed banning military use of nuclear weapons in space. This is January 1967, and I'm Wayne.
I'm Rob.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Bruce.
And you're listening to What the Riff, and Bruce is bringing this classic album.
Hey, hey, we are the Monkees. The second studio album for the Monkees was number one on the Billboard 200 for 18 weeks.
Wow.
Displacing the debut album to get there. It's been certified quintuple platinum. It was the first pop rock album to be the best-selling album of the year in the U.S., and it's the third best-selling album of the 60s.
Wow.
Can you imagine that?
Wow.
It's also the one that Monkee Michael Nesmith said was, quote, probably the worst album in the history of the world.
Well, he hated the makeup, that they were all just actors and no one really played all the instruments.
Well, very similar, yeah. Yeah. So, by the way, these are so quick, so I've got to try to hit everything. This is I'm Not Your Stepping Stone. Everybody's heard it.
And it's not a cover. Is it an original that they did?
It was written by Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart. And it was originally recorded by Paul Revere and the Raiders, but it had been recorded just a couple of months before. But Boyce and Hart were both involved in the Monkees project. And so this is probably the best known version of that song. And it was the first Monkees B-side to chart. Let's see, Mickey Dolenz, yeah, is on lead on this. He's the one that you typically think of when he's got the kind of the Monkee sound.
Well, remember in the group, Mickey Dolenz was the only one that was really serious about music.
Yeah.
The other guys we'll go along. What's the other guy's name?
They were actually, all of them were serious musicians before they were brought in. The one that you think about most of the time, I believe, is Michael Nesmith.
Okay. Yeah, he's the musician. Davy Jones is also considered that British guy that came over, which was ironic because David Bowie's real name was David Jones, and he couldn't use that name because of Davy Jones.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that.
Well, he was actually over here on Broadway, so he was the first one that was recruited. Yeah, so you're right. Davy Jones was British, and then you had the others were Mickey Dolenz, Michael Nesmith, and Peter Tork.
Right.
So this song,
I remember those names from watching the TV show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This track was written by Michael Nesmith, who had, to Wayne's point, he was a serious musician, but all of them were, you know, they were out of the musical genre. So
Bruce, I think of them as just kind of a goofy band. Like, I forget that they're a real band, but they really did write and produce some good stuff.
Yeah, because this happened so quick too. So the whole thing, Bob Raffleson and Bert Schneider had the idea for this show, and the idea was to make it about a band after they had seen the success of the Beatles, you know, Hard Day's Night and things like that. Originally, he was going to have the Lovin' Spoonful as the band.
Really?
But they had already had a contract, so they weren't able to do what they wanted to with the music. They wanted to capitalize on the music as well as the show.
Do you happen to know if that name came from the show or from the band? Like, would it have been called the Loving Spoonfuls?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm certain that the band would have been the band was created for the show.
Right. So would they have renamed the Loving Spoonfuls to the Monkees?
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah.
That's a good question. But the show actually started in September of '66.
Mm-hmm.
And the first album that came out, it was kind of a weird thing because they were like, wait a second, we're not a real band. Okay? Well, between then and this second album, they kind of became a real band.
Right.
But the pressure on these guys, they were all young, right? And they were recording the show by day, and then they'd have to get into the studio at night to do the mainly the vocal
right.
type of stuff. And then on the weekends, they were doing promotions. And then all of a sudden, the music starts doing better than the show. And now, okay, what are we going to do?
You know, yeah.
So they put them out on tour, you know? And this is where the real problem came in. They were out on tour in January of 67 when this album was released.
Oh.
They didn't know an album was coming.
Oh, wow.
It was really, really strange. So the main guy that was kind of running the thing was the one that put this thing together. And they didn't choose the tracks. They didn't choose
well,
the music.
I mean, it's his idea. They're just actors, really. I mean, he's the manager and the producer, and they do what he tells them to do. It's
right.
his thing.
But they didn't even get a copy of the thing. They had to find it in a store. The cover is a picture that they had taken for a JCPenney ad. I'm not kidding. It really caused a lot of friction because by this time they're thinking, we could actually make something of this.
And believe it or not, JCPenney may be still around.
Oh, by the way, this song, this is another kind of deeper cut. That's Davy Jones on lead. And the song was written by Carol Bayer, Seeger, and Neil Sedaka. By this time, they're like, okay, we might be a real band.
Right.
But they had even picked out the instruments that they were playing, not based on what they were good at, but how it looked. So Davy Jones was the better drummer in the group, but he was
kind of
small.
They wanted him to be a front man so they could see him.
Exactly. And then Mickey Dolenz is on drums, but he's a better guitarist.
But Davy Jones was the pinup guy. I mean,
kind of was.
There
was young girls I remember.
Yeah, he was the one.
He had all over their wall.
This is such a classic.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So this is the big hit from the album, and this is Mickey Dolenz back on lead, and the song was written by Neil Diamond.
That's right. We covered Neil Diamond in a previous episode, and I remember hearing that.
It hit number one for the week ending December 31st, 1966. It would be the best-selling single for all of 67.
Wow.
Now, think about that, all right? Jimi Hendrix came out in 67. The Rolling Stones and the Beatles were in 67, you know, and this was the number one single.
I'll tell you something real quick. A friend of mine, last night we were having dinner, and she said that when she was in high school, they were having a contest to think about who was going to be the most popular band, the Beatles or the Monkees, and the Monkees won.
That's amazing.
TV, you know?
Yep. Well, and the thing is, it was one of these things where it was just like lightning in a bottle. I mean, think about this. They went from auditioning for the show
right.
to getting on the show to being put out on tour in just months.
One thing you're not realizing, though, is they had songwriters behind them.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't write a whole lot of their songs. You already named two big names, Neil Sedaka and Neil Diamond. Are you kidding me?
Right.
And, I mean, you had another song that was already a previously kind of a hit going out. Yeah, they had hit makers doing that, and they had tons of musicians behind them.
Right.
This was well produced.
Well, the Wrecking Crew was a part of that. So.
I bet MTV was inspired seeing what TV could do for a band
said,
let's make a whole channel about it.
The whole sitcom idea of this was avant-garde at the time.
You're also describing the Partridge Family. Look what happened there.
Yeah. Well, a lot of this stuff picked up because of that.
I remember back in the day they had the 30-year reunion, and I'm disappointed I didn't go see it because obviously Peter Tork's no longer with us. But I would have loved to have gone and seen that concert.
Yep. This song had advance orders, and it went gold within 2 days.
Wow.
And kids know it because of Shrek.
Yeah, that's right.
That's it. Yeah. Oh, that was fun.
I do see
fun.
A donkey singing this.
That was fun, Bruce, and quick.
Very quick,
now
wasn't
we're on
it?
To our entertainment track by Right Column Financial.
Uh-oh, it sounds like a bug going around. I don't know. This is the theme to the Green Hornet. Guys,
yes.
The Green Hornet actually left at this time it ended. Had Bruce Lee, if you remember, as Kato, is the big thing I remember. I don't even remember the actor who played the Green Hornet. Primetime edition of the Newlywed Game premiered.
In the butt, Bob.
PBS premiered on 70 stations. The first Super Bowl also premiered on TV. Green Bay Packers
won that one.
The Rolling Stone appeared on Ed Sullivan, and they reluctantly agreed to change the lyrics of Let's Spend the Night Together to Let's Spend Some Time Together.
I remember that.
Yeah. And the Milton Berle Show last aired on ABC. And that's your entertainment from January 1967. Now we're going to move on to a staff pick, and Brian brings this to us.
Are you guys ready to get a little psychedelic?
Definitely.
This is the Yardbirds. And the song is called Happenings 10 Years Time Ago.
That's a weird name.
It is. Essentially, this is a psychedelic song where the singer is looking back because they've gone this path before, but now they're going back and they're seeing it again, wondering if it's real. You get it, right? Reincarnation type flirtations and stuff like that. So, What do you think about when you think about the Yardbirds?
I think about who's the guitarist on this one.
There you go. Now think about this: Yardbirds, the alumni, of course, Jimmy Page, Jeff Beck, and Eric Clapton. Well, in this song, Jeff Beck and Jimmy Page contribute to this song.
Oh, that's great.
Interesting.
And there's a bass player I want to introduce you to that played on this song.
John Paul Jones?
That would be him.
So that's where the new Yardbirds started getting
In 67, the Yardbirds stopped, ceased, whatever you want to call it. We've talked about this on previous podcasts. Jimmy Page acquired all rights to the Yardbirds' music catalog. So he went on to try to form the new Yardbirds, but that didn't go anywhere.
Yeah,
so,
blew over like a Led Zeppelin.
Well, there you go. So Jimmy Page and John Paul Jones decide they're going to start their own band, and they're going to recruit a singer by the name of Robert Plant, and they're going to recruit a drummer by the name of John Bonham. And they're going to be the New Yardbirds, but they said it'll never work. It'll go over like a Led Zeppelin. Well, as they say, the rest is history. But you hear the psychedelic. You hear Page playing.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking when I heard this to begin with. It sounded very much, it had that Jeff Beck feel to me.
Yeah. Can you imagine what these guys are playing at this time? And they're not knowing what the future held for them, but just amazing. The legacy that those three guitarists left on the music industry.
Yeah, definitely. All together for a period of time.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And they are still, as of this podcast recording, all three are still with us today.
Oh, really?
Jimmy Page, Jeff Beck, and Eric Clapton.
Yeah, well, I guess
they're
so, yeah.
Yeah.
Wayne saw Eric Clapton the other day. All right, that was good.
Nice one.
I'm going to pick up this next one. It's got definitely a different feel.
Rob, what you have?
Listen how this changes.
Okay.
Very folksy. You're listening to the Pozo Seco Singers.
Is this John Denver?
You know, it sounds like John Denver a bit. The guy's name is Don Williams.
Oh,
and,
yeah. I know that name.
This kind of launched his career, spending time with the Pozo Seco Singers. They're an American folk music band, and you can hear the harmonies all comes together here. The name of this is Look What You've Done.
I do remember Don Williams, but it was in the 80s.
So Don Williams had 17 number one country hits.
Yeah.
So he's got a great voice.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think his voice killed him because he died in 2017 from emphysema.
Oh.
You can hear the cigarettes in his voice.
Yeah. Well, I was about to say, when he started out, he's hitting some very low notes, but he's going to a pretty good range in there.
He does have a good range. Yeah, he was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame in 2010, and his hits, get this, have been covered by Johnny Cash, Eric Clapton, Alison Krauss, Charlie Pride, Kenny Rogers, Alan Jackson, Telly Savalas, Waylon Jennings, and Pete Townsend.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, so I mean, those people have all played covers of his music.
That's the first time that I've ever heard Telly Savalas mentioned as covering the song.
I know, me too. There were a few others here that I didn't recognize, but I knew you guys would know those.
I'm surprised nobody has done Telly Savalas as a staff pick.
Not on this
mental note.
Not on this podcast. So this single came off of their second album, I Can Make It Without You, and it made it all the way to number 32. The name is from an oil field term when they talk about a dry well. Pozo Seco, I guess. I don't know. Maybe it's a... I don't know. I don't know where it came from, but they started out in Texas. They were a big hit in San Antonio and then kind of made their way around Texas and into a national audience. But great voices. You can't argue with that at all.
Yeah. Nice one.
So now we're going on to our next staff pick, and it's Wayne. What do you have for us today?
We're going back to that psychedelic music, and these guys are sort of on the early side of this because it really just started picking up in 67. This is the Blues Magoo.
Listen to that organ.
We Ain't Got Nothing. It's their best known hit. Actually, they're sort of a one-hit wonder. They were part of that New York City music scene that had, we talked about the Lovin' Spoonful and the Youngbloods, who actually put an album out at the same time this year, in 67. The band is more based on their influence. They actually influenced Pink Floyd, Syd Barrett, considered these guys one of the prime people, and we talked about Sarsaparilla Secrets a while back on that album, and this is one of the influences to that. And if you listen, you can kind of like visualize that kind of convergence.
Yeah. Love the bass.
Mm-hmm. They played on American Bandstand. This thing peaked at number 5, so it was on the side of their album Psychedelic Lollipop, and the album actually reached number 21. They had one song that kind of hit the top 100. It's called One by One. So if I told you the Blues Magoos, where would you think they've got their name from?
Mr. Magoo?
Mr. Magoo.
Mr. Magoo. I would have thought so too, but supposedly it's from a definition of generally a cool person who likes music both funky and low volume. And I'm going, okay, I can imagine the funky part, but I'm not a low volume person, as you well know.
I think we dated ourselves, too, by mentioning Mr. Magoo.
Yeah, Mr. Magoo was wasn't even nearsighted or farsighted. He was no-sighted. He could barely see anything.
Cartoon
and one all over the place, and... with Thurston Howell III was the...
Jim Bacchus.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
So this, Mr. Magoo was on Gilligan's Island.
Yeah. This song was used in the 1968 movie Easy Rider.
Ah. All right. Thanks.
Oh, yes.
Is this a deep cut?
Indeed. This is probably the most intimidating staff pick I've ever had.
Really?
This is... good, obviously, it's Good Vibrations, the Beach Boys. This is the high watermark for the Beach Boys. It was released in October 66 as a single, and it was on the charts in January 67.
Just listen to that.
Man,
that's a theremin.
It is. It's actually an electro-theremin. It's not quite a theremin, but yeah, that's the idea.
To me, this is the 60s right here. This is... Pink Floyd, I mean, the Beach Boys, the Beatles.
Mm. This is the costliest single ever recorded.
What?
It was right after Pet Sounds, and it was intended for Brian Wilson's kind of magnum opus, right? The Smile. And this single was released. It was 90 hours of recording in little snippets in four different recording areas, and Wilson kind of stuck it together.
Really?
So, yeah.
You can hear that change right there.
Yeah, there's six different sections in this, and it's only like 3.5 minutes long.
No multi-tracking?
On this, I don't know all of the processing that they did for it, but it was all Brian Wilson would get little snippets in of like short musical modules that he could kind of pull out and plug in different places.
Here's another change.
Yeah. So yeah, more than 90 hours.
Harpsichord. And he's throwing all types of music in here.
And the triplets in the cello main section. Yeah, it's amazing.
Another Wrecking Crew backing. That's the Wrecking Crew was the band on this. I know that.
He did have a lot of musicians in this.
That's a great. If you want to listen to a documentary about the Wrecking Crew, that's a great doc. We've mentioned it before, but go look it out.
So Brian Wilson's mother was the inspiration for this song. She talked about vibrations, like dogs would bark at people that they kind of picked up a bad vibe from.
Auras.
Ah.
Yeah. So.
What do you think about when you hear this song? What commercial pops into your head?
Pepsi.
Sunkiss
is what comes to mind.
But Pepsi owns Sunkiss, that's why.
I don't know. I see The Who singing this because this is their favorite song to sing that's not theirs. This is one of those ones, and I can see them singing it.
Yeah. Engineer Chuck Britt said that Wilson considered this song to be, quote, his whole life performance in one track.
I never realized how many sections of this song there were.
Yeah. Well, this was going, like I said, this was going to be in Smile. And at the time, the Beatles and the Beach Boys were kind of competing, you know, in their albums.
With the Monkees, apparently.
apparently
according to Tammy Danzy. Listen to that.
It's just so complex.
Yeah.
But it's eminently listenable.
Oh, scary movie time.
There's that
awesome
theremin cello duet.
Oh, man. Yes. And now we're already at the end of the podcast.
It's fast, isn't it?
What do we have here? Snoopy.
Versus the Red Baron.
So in the Peanuts comic strips, Snoopy was always fighting on his Sopwith camel
with
the Red Baron.
Yeah.
That's right. There was always a section in all those cartoons.
Yeah.
We usually take this time to get to what we didn't. Top hits of January 1967. Tell It Like It Is. Aaron Neville. Talked about this group, Paul Revere and the Raiders. A Good Thing. That was a great song. Sugartown by Nancy Sinatra. Words of Love, the Mamas and the Papas. Standing in the Shadows of Love, the Four Tops. Speaking of the Beach Boys, Carl Wilson was indicted for draft invasion.
Oh.
So I did not realize that. And we talked about a little psychedelic. There was a human being in San Francisco's Golden Gate Park. Had Jefferson Airplane, Grateful Dead, Big Brother and the Holy Company, and Quicksilver Messenger Service. Some of the albums that came out. The Doors, their first album. You're talking about psychedelic. We're going... The Rascals, they had a kind of a greatest hits. Manfred Mann, Soul Man. The Supremes. The Rolling Stones had Between the Buttons. Miles Davis, Miles Smiles. I don't know if you're into jazz. Roy Orbison. He sings Don Gibson, so I guess he was doing cover songs then. The Stone Ponies, Nancy Sinatra, and the Youngbloods.
You know, this is just about the shortest podcast I think we've done.
It really flew, didn't it? This
right
is the 60s, though.
Yeah, it's right at 25 minutes. I think we've done a couple that are in that range. Yeah, that's what happened in January of 67. I wasn't even a year old yet, by the way.
I do have a confession. I may have shared this with our listening audience before and with you guys. Anytime we do a 60s podcast, I go immediately back into my car on the way home and put it on the 60s channel.
Yeah.
Because it just gets me in that...
Gets you in the mood.
That mood and that frame of mind.
Well, you've been listening to January 1967. We're What the Riff. I'm Wayne.
I'm Rob.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Bruce.
Hope you guys enjoyed it. We did. See you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to What the Riff. We hope you enjoyed the songs we had on tap today. Please tell your friends about us. Check us out at whattheriff.com and follow us on Facebook. Special thanks to our sponsors, Wright Collin Financial, Stanton Electric, and Marbury Creative Group. That's all for this week. See you next week on What the Riff?